Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 15th day of Adar Sheni. Thank you to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Romans, David Hockhauser, for making this shiurim available to you online. Today's response from the 15th of Adar Sheni of Tavshin Nun Zayin of 1997. I will point out that this tshuva is from Shut L'Horot Natan, Chilek Yud Aleph, Simon Tzadik Gimel, Volume 11, response number 93, and is, I'll tell you who wrote that in a second, but is dated not only to Tedvav Adar, Bet, the 15th of Adar Sheni, but also to the Purim, to Shushan Purim, meaning Purim de Mukafin, meaning in Yerushalayim they were celebrating Purim. I note that because yesterday I taped a shiur for the 14th of Adar Sheni, which is Purim for most of the world. But the shiur was written by Ravad Yosef, who lived in Yerushalayim at the time that he wrote it, so for him it wasn't Purim, and he does not note it. So after I had finished taping the shiur, somebody said to me, 14th of Adar Sheni, that's Purim. And I realized I could have just said, this is probably Purim for you. So maybe you didn't listen to it, maybe you did, but if you did, you'll notice that I didn't mention it was Purim when I'm taping it, you know, a year and a half before you're going to hear it, and therefore I forgot to notice it. So I apologize for that. But this is on the 15th of Adar Sheni, which would have been Purim, but this Shut L'Horot Natan is written by a man named Rav Natan Gestetner, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Bnei Brak and a prolific author for many, many years. He was born in 1932 and he passed away in 2010. So when he writes this tshuva, he's just about 65 years old. And it's responsive in reaction to a phenomenon that he had noticed. And I found it interesting in terms of what it says about the process of and the, of producing Torah and some of the issues in producing Torah. He says, V'chan makom iti l'archiv, said, I have a little bit to say about some stuff. And he wants to note that in the last little while, I see Tsurbe Mirabanan, meaning young Torah scholars, who are publishing these books, these Sfarim, of Likutim of Piskei Halachot. They're just gathering rulings on various halachic issues. And they're just, it's just an osif, it's just a collection. And then they're publishing it. So he says, he doesn't say this quite like this, but he says, I'm in no way coming out against the collections, right? I'm not saying that the act of collecting things isn't valuable. And he points out, they're printed as commentaries of Shulchan Aruch, but there's a sfarim called Sha'arei Tshuva, Pitkei Tshuva, Darkei Tshuva. And what those works do is they gather lots of tshuvot that you might not come across otherwise, and they mention them, and they tell you what they said. They sort of give you a digest of those tshuvot. It says, those are great works. They're a great favor to the rest of us, because those people went through the bibliographical process of looking and seeking and finding all the sfarim and going through them and finding the tshuvot that are worth our while to learn, you know, that we are very relevant to us, that we can make great use of. And they went through hundreds of tshuvot to find it, hundreds of sfarim. And without them, many of us would not have known all these issues, because to find all these, not everybody has all these sfarim, and so they're finding all these interesting sfarim. Now, that's what he's talking about. And I will point out that in our project here, as we've learned some of the tshuvot of, in particular, what comes to my mind is Tzitz Eliezer and especially Ravad Yosef, they're not even Osfei Tshuvot. That's not their role. That's not what they think they're doing, is creating a gathering of responses. And yet, they remind us of all the many, many Sfarim out there that may be valuable Sfarim out there that many of the rest of us haven't even heard of, let alone learned from, let alone gotten the essential points of. So Rav Gestetner is pointing out, I'm not saying in any way that the people that do that work for us aren't doing great work. They're doing great, great work for us. And then he pauses to point out that, in fact, there's a dichotomy in rabbinic literature going back to the time of the Rishonim between the kinds of product of one's writing one does. There are those Rishonim, there are those authorities who their job and their role is, and what they function as, is to look into the topics of the Gemara, to explain the Gemara to us, to go through it, to comment on it, to understand its workings, and to give us the way to understand it. That would be like Rashi and Tosfot and the Ramban and the Rashba. And that's what they did. But there are others who, their role was slightly different. They gathered conclusions of halachot into one place, and they gave us codified works of halacha. That would be like the Rambam, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah. Now, it happens to be that the Rashba also wrote tshuvot. The Ramban wrote some tshuvot, but the Rashba wrote many, many tshuvot, many responses. That would be more of the Rashba in the halachic mode. But he didn't write a codificatory work. And a codification would seem to be more about gathering halachot. Now, I will say, I've heard many people suggest or argue that the Rambam's Sefer Halachic work, Mishneh Torah, is also very much of a commentary on the Gemara, because by virtue of how he ruled on a Gemara, you either are forced to or you necessarily notice how he understood that Gemara. So you could argue with this, but you could argue with the extent to which it is a complete dichotomy. But it is an important and interesting dichotomy, right? There are people who work on the daf, who explain the sugya as it comes along, and then they'll go into it, and they'll go into the ins and outs and back and forth of the sugya, try to understand it fully and try to understand the problems with it and everything that goes on with it. And then there have been important rabbinic scholars who saw their central role in the particular work that they're writing as being giving us halakhic conclusions so we can get to halakha. And he says, Rav Gestetner says, and remember that this is in volume 11 of his work, so this is not a man who is shy about publishing his own work. So we'll think about that as we go on and to make sure that we understand what he's saying. But he says about these different kinds of Torah scholars, one of the last psukim in Kohelet says, Divrei Chachamim Kedarvon. Note the words of the scholar of the Torah scholars are like a darvon is how you keep a horse or an ox on its straight on an ox more than a horse on its straight path. It's the goad, I think, the ox goad. Ukmas merot nituvim, and like planted nails, like nails fastened into the wall, and then balei asufot, gatherings, numero echad, all comes from one shepherd. So whatever it means in its literal sense, it was taken by Chazal to be a reference to the words of Torah scholars in terms of different versions of Torah literature. So he says, ki be'emet kol divrei chachamim, all the words of our Torah scholars are like darvanot, they're like ox goads, and they put us in the right direction. They teach us the proper truth of Torah, teach us how to understand Torah properly. But some of them are like masmerot, or like nails, and they pick a Talmudic sugya, and they nail down to that sugya, and they figure out the right and the full answer to that sugya. V'yesh ke'inyan asufot. There are some that gather. So, in other words, a little bit of a long way of saying, he's not against the idea of gathering, meaning his work, fundamentally, he writes tshuvot, a lot of tshuvot, but his tshuvot are try to understand Talmudic sugyot. He'll see himself as more like a Rashi or a Ramban or somebody like that. But that is not meant to denigrate those whose role is to gather and to codify and to bring together in one place so that people don't have to do the searching themselves, because there are people who are not, as the term might go, library rats. The people who are not spend all their day just looking through volumes, looking for things to write about, to say. Looking for things to bring to light that other people might not have noticed. You know, going through all that, I remember many, many years ago, Professor Trusky, Alev Shalom, just casually said to me, you know, I spent decades wandering the stacks at Widener Library, and it's a remarkable image, right? But there are people who don't spend their time spending decades wandering the stacks of Widener Library, finding unknown sources, unknown books, and then bringing them to us. So they do an extremely valuable service so that we can know how we should act. Right, so it's all Torah, and we all need both kinds of Torah. And though each kind of scholar needs the other kind of a scholar, right? If you're a Rashi, it would be very helpful to have a codification. If you're a codifier, it's very helpful to have those who go in depth into the sugyot. And then he reads that also into the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, "Dvash v'chalav tachat l'shonecha." It's like honey and milk under your tongue. So it's not so vital to me to remember how he learned it. He thinks of milk as being something that's produced after hard work, and that's because of a Gemara in Becharot. It talks about he thinks that milk is the product of hard work, and that would be the Rashi tells us Ramban version, where they do the hard work in terms of drilling deep down into the sugya to understand it fully. And then there's honey, which is something that comes to us as just sweet, and those are the people who gather together the various psakim, the various rulings of others, and give it to us in a way that's just sweet and easy for us to absorb. Because the bee just gathers the honey, not so important to us. The point is, there's two kinds of product of Torah scholarship, and they're both valuable, and he's not saying anything other than they're both valuable, right? So there's a melakeit, somebody who gathers a lot of stuff, and they don't primarily say new things. They primarily gather what's been there before them and rule on it and put it into a form where it's usable in a way that can produce practical halakha. And then there are those who spend their time drilling deep into understanding what's going on. But here's the big but, and why it's relevant to his discussion of these young men who are just producing these collections. The common denominator to both of these types of Torah scholars is whether they are ones who explain sugyot or ones who gather other rulings so they can put them into a ruling. Shekol ma shelubisi, for him, everything that went into their sfarim, into their books, haya achar hayegiya vahitamkut vahiyun. It was after great toil, after delving into things in depth, after Iyun, after looking at them carefully and critically and thinking well about them, meaning, and this is clearly true about the Rebbe, but it's probably almost definitely true, it's definitely true about Rabbi Yosef Karo, but the Rebbe, they didn't just say, oh, so-and-so says this, so-and-so says this, I'm going to put it into a book. That's the point that he's making. They had a critical eye for what they would put in. And everything they, every time they found an opinion in earlier commentators, in earlier authorities that had a problem with it, they would think about it carefully and then decide whether or not to include it. He points out the Mishneh Berurah in the introduction to the Mishneh Berurah. So the Mishneh Berurah, by Chafetz Chaim, years ago I heard a story about a brother of a friend of mine who went on a date with a descendant of the Mishneh Berurah. And the date wasn't going well, and at some point the young woman wanted to hint at or mention her illustrious ancestry without it, and she thought he didn't know who she was and where she came from, so she brings up the Mishneh Berurah, and the young man in the story says, yeah, it's a halacha book. Right, dismissively. So you can imagine, people think of Mishneh Berurah that way, when it's really not that way. The Mishneh Berurah is not just, you know, he just writes stuff. He gathered and he paid attention to what the halakhic literature, since the time of the Shulchan Aruch, had come to believe about all the halakhic issues in Or HaChaim. And in the introduction to his book, the Mishneh Berurah writes, "V'lo yachshov ha-me'ayein," and the person looking at my Mishneh Berurah shouldn't think, and I just copied stuff without paying attention. I was like a misasik, right? I gathered a bunch of books and I say, okay, what does so-and-so hold? And I wrote it in my book. And what does so-and-so hold? I wrote it in my book. And that's how I got to a book. Right? That would be the kind of collection that Rav Natan Gestetner is complaining about, is going to be complaining about. So the Mishneh Berurah says, I didn't do that. I looked at every siman. I looked at in everything that I've written here in Mishneh Berurah. I looked at the Rishonim on the issue. I looked at almost all the Achronim that I could find that I'm going to quote. And I saw and thought about what they were saying to figure out what's right, what's not right, and how it is. In other words, Mishneh Berurah is telling you there was a process of criticism that went into it. It's not just I'm recording what's been said. It's I've gone through and thought about what's been said, and I'm giving you that which seems to me to be relevant and to be appropriate and to be proper and to be correct. And so the Gestetner says, v'chol geonei batrei, all of the later authorities who did these kinds of likutim of gatherings, so they were all very bright people who had worked hard at understanding as well, and who could have given, you know, Iyun Shur, but they sort of, Moshe Feinstein, who's known mostly for his responsa, also wrote books of Kiddushim, new ideas he had gotten while learning Torah. So the Gestetner says, say, don't think it's like a shortcut. You know, you just do a likut. You just pick a bunch of books off the shelf. You put them together. You pick out some here and some there. And you excerpt here and excerpt there. Ah, you got a sefer. Right? The asefa, the gathering, the collection, has to be with great wisdom to know what should be included and what should not be included. And therefore, if you want to be one of these people, he says, if you want to be an osef halachot, the gatherer of halachos, you still need to spend the time to make sure that you understand how to learn. You have to know how to think. You have to know how to write B'iyun. You have to know how to delve into things. You have to know what Torah is like and how it works. And you've got to be a person who's gotten a good enough understanding of how to grapple with halachic issues that you can paskin yourself. Right? So you're going to say, I don't need to know how to paskin myself because I can just gather the Chayei Adam and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and the Mishneh Berurah and the Yochai Shulchan. I'll just tell you what they say and I'll be fine. So if you're not the Gestetner, they're saying you can't do that because that's not an anything. You have to be able to be a person before you have the ability, the right to do that. You have to know what is to include, what not. You have to be able to sift through. And therefore, if you have a Talmud Chacham, if you have a young Torah scholar who wants to write a Sefer, and I have to say that not in the world that I live in so much, although maybe I didn't notice it, and that's why, anyway, maybe I didn't notice that people in my world are also publishing Sfarim, and they think publishing Sfarim is the important thing, but certainly in the more what is called the Haredi world, that in that world, publishing Sfarim is an important thing. It's an important marker of being a certain, you know, of having achieved a certain level of Torah scholarship. So there's a great push to publish. In the academic world, Lahavdil, there's also a great push to publish, because if you haven't published, people say, what do you know? I remember years ago, I have a close friend, Rabbi Binyamin Blau, who was a grandson of Rav Pinchas Teitz. I feel like his name was Pinchas Meir Teitz. Anyway, Rabbi Teitz of Elizabeth, New Jersey, who, when he was a young man, was wanted to get married, and also there was a push to publish the Sefer. So he published the Sefer because you had to publish the Sefer. So Rav Gishtetner is bothered a little bit by this idea of young scholars feeling the immediate need to publish. So he says, before you publish, the first thing you have to do is learn the Berur HaSugyot HaAmukot. Learn to understand and to clarify and to pick apart the deep topics in Halacha. And to learn how to get to their essence and to work hard to go into their roots of into the roots of how the Rishonim understood it, the Achronim understood it. Get to the point you can really understand this stuff. And then, after years of struggle with this, of working at it, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will get you to a level that you're able to lasuke shmatata aliba dehilchata. You'll know how to take a sugya to its halachic conclusions. And then once you're at that point, meaning you have to do, basically you have to do an internship, you have to do a preparation, you have to understand the way the world works, you have to work hard at it. And then you'll become a great tree, you'll be able to publish your svarim, and then it'll all be great. But if you spend your time as a kid, right, as a young Torah scholar, with just gathering what a lot of other people said without thinking about it, without analyzing, without critiquing it. Meaning, even though you're not... So, I think part of this point is, let's say we were to pick the Tshuvot literature. In this series, we're dealing with a lot of Tshuvot. So, let's say I just said to you, yeah, you know what? I open up Tshuvot, I read a Tshuva, and I present it to you. So, if that's all that I did, I think Rav Gishtetner would say, well, that's a problem. Whereas he's saying, before it's even relevant to start gathering things, you have to be a person who, you read a Tzitzeliezer, you read a Ramban on the Gemara, you read a whatever, you're able to say, well, this is difficult, I don't understand this, I have to work at that, and then you figure out where it comes from. So that's what he's trying to suggest. So if you spend your time just gathering stuff, I think from here, I think from there, you say, well, they're all great people. I think from here, from there. So that's a problem. And then also, it trains your mind, he says, to be lazy. You don't think well, because all you say is, well, so-and-so said so, and that's fine. You'll always have to be dependent on others because you won't have any way of thinking about Torah yourself. So he says, I want to copy over for you a ruling, a decree that came from the Noda B'Yehuda and his Beis Din in Prague. Okay, so this is, and it was recorded in the Sefer Tshuva Me'ava, which is the Book of Tshuvot. We've seen one or two of them by Rabbi Elazar Fleckless, who was the very, very close Talmud, very, very close student of the Noda B'Yehuda. And they write, so this is the late 1700s. They say there are people just publishing Sfarim. And they're causing a waste of time because people are reading those Sfarim rather than, I'm pretty sure that's what it means, rather than the Sfarim that have real value to people. So that's a interesting, important question. If you think about, let's say, somebody like Rav Ovadia Yosef, he read unbelievably widely. He read, he knew almost everything. So other people don't have that time and energy and aren't able to do it. So then they have to make, and I wrote about this in my, I wrote a book called We're Missing the Point, What's Wrong with the Jewish Orthodox Jewish Community, How to Fix It. And I wrote a little bit about this idea of having to save our energy or to channel our resources in careful ways, since we don't have limitless energy. So we have to figure out what we can learn and what we cannot learn. So I think that the Rebbe Yehuda and his Beit Din are complaining if a new Sefer comes out every day and people rush to read the new Sefer, well, there's all these important Sfarim that don't get read, that don't get used, and that's a problem. So I think in our times, for example, myself, and if you don't like my editorializing, I always apologize for it, even though I know I'm noticing I do it a lot. And this is, we're coming to the end of this series because the other Shani is like the end of the things that I'm taping. So if you have a problem with it, you can email me at grothst@gmail.com, although it might be a little bit too late for this series. It might teach me a lesson for my next series. But a Sefer like the Aruch HaShulchan is a very important Sefer, very well done, very important, very valuable, but not so simple to just read casually. So if everybody's always rushing to read the new Sefer that comes out, so that's a problem. So the Dodo B'Yehuda is saying, so we have that problem today because all these people are publishing Sfarim, and it's causing a waste of time. And then he says, but we would have been quiet about that. But people are producing halachic Sfarim. They're saying they're codifying halacha, and it's getting out there in the world, and they're causing people to do the wrong thing. Because there are some guys in cities who are moreh tzedek, meaning they're rabbis of a shul, basically. They're rabbis of a small town. And they haven't done the hard work of learning how to be a posek, of getting to the level of knowledge and understanding and of critical thinking to produce proper psak. So he says, they don't have the palate to know how to taste and to really distinguish the essence of the matter. And they think that any sefer that they see, then you can rely on it because it's a sefer. Right? If it's printed, it must be true. In other words, the way they're thinking about it. And therefore, the Nota Bene is saying, and his Beit Din is saying, we see all the people publishing Svarim. That's part of the reason in our times why people like get haskamos. It's always been true for hundreds of years why people got haskamos. They got somebody to say, this is a good guy and his sefer is probably good and this, but it doesn't quite solve the problem, right? If there are books coming out all the time, how do you know what to read, what not to read? So the Nota Yehuda and his Beit Din, because of this problem, and because the problem was coming to halachic issues, because there were people publishing halachas for him who weren't really prepared to do that, who didn't really have the training to do that. And then there were local rabbis who were reading those and assuming that must be halacha, and that must have halachic value, because it wouldn't be published otherwise. And therefore, they say, we are making a takana, we're making a decree in our community, that before somebody is 40 years old, they should not publish a sefer. Once they got to be 40, so the reason they picked 40, to some extent, the Mishnah Pirkei Avot says, you'll get deeper insight once you're 40, so then they can, if they're relevant to it. So Rav Natan Gishtend is going to say, well, that didn't happen. It's not. We don't rule that way. He says, but we don't rule that way because we see important Gedolim, important Torah scholars who published their first farm before they were 40. So that didn't get accepted. But from the way they wrote about it, you see how worried they were that before your fruit ripened, as it were, you shouldn't be putting out Sfarim. And that includes Sfar Likutus. You say, well, I don't need to worry about that because I'm not writing my own stuff. I'm just doing a Likut. So the answer he's saying is, no, to do a Likut, to do a collection, you also need to understand what's going on, and therefore, you can't do that before you've achieved a certain level as well. Now, he does concede a push in the other direction. First, he says that the worst part for the Nota Yehuda was that these were books that were being written, sermons that were being written, that claimed to be able to rule on practical halachic issues. So that created a practical halachic problem, that people were going to get to the wrong halacha, the wrong practice. You could argue that that's different for Sfarim that analyze Talmudic Sugyot, but do not claim to be Pasking Halacha. And then he says, in our time also, he calls it Ikva de Mashiach. This is 1997, a 65-year-old man, but he's already calling it Ikva de Mashiach, right? The time around when, or just before Mashiach comes. So the Gemara in Sotem, in Tanam Bet, talks about some terrible things that will happen to Ikva de Mashiach. One of them is Chochmat Sofarim Tisrak, that people will forget the wisdom of scribes, of Torah scholars, and of those who fear sin, and people won't like them anymore, and the truth will be hard to find, which is an interesting comment to notice in our times when people have a hard time finding the truth, or even agreeing what the truth is, and people will, and the strength will go to people who are just have physical strength, or you know, economic might, and don't care about Torah at all. He's in such a time you want more Sfarim, because every sefer is a Kiddush Hashem. It's a reminder that there are people out there who care about Torah and are working on Torah and interested in Torah. So there's a value to that as well, and he understands that. And it will. And also, you want to encourage young people to feel like they have a role that they can play. Right? If you tell somebody, listen, especially this is especially true in our times. If you tell somebody, listen, you know what? Go off and work hard till you're 40, and then maybe we'll let you publish a sefer. Maybe you'll be a somebody. There are people who will accept that discipline and the need to work in that way, but there are people who won't. And there are people who will be discouraged by that. And you want to encourage. So somebody comes to you, they're 21, 22 years old, they work hard at Torah, they know something, they produce a sefer. You don't want the answer to be, what do you think you know? You're 21. That's also not a good answer, although there might be truth to it, but it's also not a perfect answer. You want to encourage people to know and to understand that they're going to be able to produce stuff. And you want to be encouraging in that way. And therefore, he says we should encourage them to keep notebooks and to write books and to write it, but as long as a lot of hard effort of iyun and ha'amaka goes into it. They have to be thinking carefully about it. It can't just be, I want to produce a sefer, here's a quick sefer that I'm going to produce. It's got to take effort and thinking and delving and working. So he says young Torah scholars need to be spending their time learning about how to think, and then to delve deeply into an issue and think well about it in all of the sugyos of Shas throughout the Gemara, and to understand what the Rishonim and the Achronim say. And then as they work at it, they will develop, and each of them develop in their own way. It might be some of them will develop at a very younger age, able to produce an important, valuable sefer, even a sefer halacha l'maisa, and some at a slightly older age, but that's what they have to spend their time doing, and not just writing over things and gathering them into a book, which is what he's so much complaining about. And then he says, and by the way, if all you're doing is, you know, you're going to take half of the Shulchan Aruch and half the Chayyadim and put put into a collection and say, oh, here it is. You're going to just go around. You know, it's going to do not work. You're just going to copy over stuff from a bunch of different places and put it all into one place without any editorial copy. Meaning that idea of collecting thoughts, let's say the Torah Tmima, collects various rabbinic ideas and puts them into a commentary on Chumash, there's a great value there, but there was clearly an editorial process that went into it, because the Torah Tmima only really recorded those rabbinic comments on which he wanted to say something, and then there's a choosing process. So if you're going to do a choosing process that has thought to it and that is based on an intellect that is well-trained to know how to analyze the truth and separate truth from not truth and separate that which is productive from that which is not as productive, that's not what Rav Gishtetner is talking about or complaining about. But if all you're going to do is you're going to take some books and excerpt them in a way that feels comfortable and feel good, he says, you have to worry that that might count as Bittul Torah, which is a really surprising idea because you think I'm spending all my day learning Torah. But he says it might count as not properly learning Torah. He says, the Chachmei HaMusar, he doesn't quote a specific book. They said, if you're able to learn at a certain level of intensity and of iyun, of depth of understanding, and instead you just casually, so let's say somebody could really learn well, and they can delve into a sugya and get to the depth of it, get to the fullest understanding of it, and instead all they learn is daf yomi. You know, let's say they learn seven daf yomis a day. I recently read Rav Gorin's autobiography, or it's not quite an autobiography, sort of word of reminiscences, and he mentions that at a young age he started learning seven dapim of Gemara, of Bavli a day, and then eventually moved up to 12 dapim a day, and he continued it for a long, long time. I'm not saying anything about what he did or didn't learn in his life and how he did or didn't learn. I'm just pointing out, let's say somebody only did that. That's what they spent their day doing. When they had the ability, instead of just reading through it, right? That's what you're learning seven dapim a day, you're just reading through it. So instead of reading through it, somebody could have had the episode of Gishtetner, you're saying that the Chachmei HaMusarit said, that's called Bitul Torah Be'echut. The quality of your learning is a Bitul Torah, because you're someone you could really spend a lot of time thinking more deeply about it, and instead you're doing it in this way. And the Taz in Or HaChaim says, Sha'Torah ina mitkayemet el misha memit atzmo aleha. Torah depends on somebody who kills himself over it, not literally kills himself, but dahainu, so he explains what that means. Shosek bepilpul umasa matan shel halakha. He involves himself in the back and forth of halakha, in the give and take, in the getting into the trenches of the halakhic fight, because the main element of being involved in Torah is that hard work, that toil at it. And that's what we mean when we say la'asok b'divrei Torah. So Rav Gishtetner says there's more to say about this, but I've given you enough, and you can figure out more on your own about this. So it's the last piece of the tshuva that we'll see. He then says, to be considered somebody who is at the level of a Mori Horai, now he's clearly not somebody who thinks you don't get there. He's gotten there for sure. And he's not saying, I'm so great I got there. He's just saying, I did the work. So before you can get there, you can get there. But before you can get there, you have to do the work. So the work, now he describes it, is it's not enough to know how a lot of people have paskin. Not enough to know how the Shulchan Aruch has paskin, because most of the she'elot that come before somebody, most of the questions that come before somebody are not in Shulchan Aruch. They're new cases. Sometimes, you know, I find this in Shuvot sometimes. Sometimes the answer is, it's a paragraph in Shulchan Aruch. But often, it's not, because the case is slightly off. And therefore, the Moreh, the Posek, the halachic authority, has to compare cases and has to say, what's this more similar to, what's this less similar to? And that's why he says, my ancestor, the Chatam Sofer, the was apparently a descendant of the Chatam Sofer, in his commentary in Chulin, says the main thing that when we talk about students being mishamesh, their teacher, working with their teacher, interning with their teacher, is to watch the practice of the damot milta lemilta, to watch the practice of comparing one thing to another, to knowing what's a valid comparison, what's a not valid comparison. And he says that when people talk about chidushim, the custom was to say gleich or ungleich, which is Yiddish for similar or not similar, meaning the question is, have I found an accurate, proper analogy to what's come before? And that's what we're supposed to do when we build new knowledge in halakha and Torah. We're supposed to be building off what came before, and the question then becomes, what is it more similar, and to what case can you have it? So I remember, you know, my teacher in Yeshivat HaRetzion, Rav Ezra Bick, my first Rebbe when I got to Yeshivat HaRetzion, many years ago, wrote an article about artificial insemination and who would count as the halachic mother. About artificial insemination is one question, but even more about surrogacy. Who would count as the halachic mother? And there's a whole question about that, and that's not our topic today. But my only point is that people had said, well, there's no precedent for this in halacha whatsoever. And he starts off the article by saying the part of the practice of halacha is figuring out what are the relevant analogous precedents. There's no exact precedent for lots of things, but how could you analogize it to? That was true also for analogize it to. That was also true for how you figure out how to use computers, what they count as or don't count as in terms of writing, not writing, erasing. All the questions that come up, this is what Stettner's saying, not with these examples at all, but what he's saying is the practice of halacha, being a halachic practitioner, is being able to know how to compare what to what and make that. And that's part of the experience of interning with a prior Rav, is to understand how he doesn't, to learn from there to do it yourself and that to build up that quality. And therefore, he says, if you want to be somebody who is a has the crown of Torah in it properly, spend your childhood years understanding our rabbi's words, and the more you do and the more you work at it, then you'll eventually come to it and you'll eventually publish your Sfarim in this. And therefore, his point is, don't publish Sfarim when you're young. Don't like rush to just gather sources so you can publish Sfarim, work at it, and from the work you'll get to the level you want to be. And that is your responsible day for the 15th day of Adar Sheni for the Shushan Purim of 1997, but Shushan Purim in general in the years where there's an Adar Sheni. I thank you for listening to me. I hope you've enjoyed this experience. Thank you to the OU. Thank you to Rabbi Jacob Romans, David Hochhauser. Have a great day.